Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The HSE is advising people to consider all other options before they look for treatment in an acute hospital as winter viruses put high pressure on emergency departments around the country. Speaking on Morning Ireland today, Chief Operations Officer Damien McCallion said the health service is using all available facilities, public and private, to keep the flow moving in the system and minimise the impact on people. And his comments follow a report in the Irish Times today that says the HSE recruitment freeze this year poses risks to longer wait times, demoralised staff and providing poor value for public money. Well, I'm joined now by Sinn Féin spokesperson on health, David Cullinan, TD. David, the recruitment ban which was put in place last November, it was always expected to have an impact, but we see from this report in the Irish Times that the HSE identified that it would hamper those efforts to discharge patients and make emergency department waiting times worse.
Well, I think that HSE report is just stating the obvious, and I made it clear when the recruitment ban was first put in place that it would have dire consequences for patient safety and for the ability of the HSE to improve services for this year. And it's very clear now that across acute services, primary care and community care, many services are stretched. I spoke over the last number of months to managers in a lot of hospitals. I visited a number of hospitals just after the recruitment embargo was put in place, and very tough decisions are being made by managers and hospitals in relation to whether they keep wards open because of a lack of staff or transfer staff elsewhere to keep other services going. I also know that in community services, many of those teams that provide care in the home but also provide care for people with chronic conditions and older people in the communities are also stretched. And the problem is that when people retire or leave at the public service in the health system for whatever reason, in the vast majority of cases, people can't be replaced. And it is going to put huge pressure on the system for the remainder of this year. And we know when the National Service Plan for the HSE comes out, it's likely that only one third of the staff that were recruited over the last 3 years in terms of the annual number will be available to the health service this year because of a lack of funding. And I think all of that is going to have a massive impact on the ability of the health service to deal with the trolley crisis, but also the long waiting lists.
Okay, there was a piece written by the former Director General of the HSE at the weekend, Tony O'Brien, which really contradicts, in a way, what you're saying. And I take into account that the INMO told us in their latest figures there were 640 people on trolleys. But Tony O'Brien says that the January headlines are usually dominated by record numbers of patients on hospital trolleys. But this year has been different, and he claims that the trolley figures haven't dominated in the way that they normally do because they're not as bad as they normally are.
But you also have to look at what's happening in hospitals, and there was a lot of work put in by the head of the HSE to make sure that the trolley numbers were not as high this Christmas and this January as last year. And one of the consequences of that was a wholesale cancellation of elective procedures in many hospitals. And that's not without its consequences. So in essence, we're just shifting the problem from one part of the health service to the other. But also, if you look at the last number of days, we're beginning to see now a sharp increase in the number of patients on trolley. So according to the INMO, yesterday was 640 patients. There was a story of an 87-year-old man, a patient who waited up 100 hours on a trolley in University Hospital Limerick. And there are many human stories very similar to that. So there is no doubt that we have a trolley crisis, not just in the winter, but all year round. Mm-hmm. It's almost become normal now that we have on average 500 patients a day languishing on hospital trolleys. While there was some improvement in late December and early January, I think what we're now seeing is again a spike in the number of patients on trolleys. And that happens. It's hard always to determine when a peak will come. But if you look at the numbers in the round right across the year, and according to the INMO figures, last year there was 122,000 patients went without a bed. That was a record year. And I think that's just illustrates the real problems that we have in our emergency departments across the state.
Tony O'Brien also outlined in that article just how much the demand for health services have increased. And given that that, because of our population increase, is the way it is going to go, and our ageing population, of course, as well, we're going to have to prioritise need. That's the model, isn't it, that we're going to have to look at?
Absolutely. And of course, in our alternative budget, the same as when the government presents a budget, we have to prioritise. But what you cannot do and should not do is sacrifice frontline healthcare services. So we just talked about a recruitment embargo. It makes no sense whatsoever when we have so many people who are graduating and coming through all of the training colleges and training courses across all modalities of healthcare, that with the exception of consultants and nurses in fourth-year training positions, we're saying that these people can't be recruited into the public system. And the logic of that is that they will go and work in the private sector or emigrate and go abroad, which nobody wants, after years and years of us training them. We also know that we have capacity problems, capacity constraints in hospitals. The Minister for Health last year promised 1,500 rapid build beds, and those beds have not been funded. So yes, we have an ageing demographic, we have a growing population, there is increased demand, and of course then at certain times of the year you have illnesses circulating in the community, which puts a lot more demand on the health service. But it doesn't make sense in that context to not properly fund the health service. And as you know, the head of the HSE made it very clear last year that he doesn't believe that the health service even has enough money to stand still, never mind any additional money to improve the health services. So that's the context in which we're now having a discussion on the numbers of patients on trolleys and all of the challenges that we know exist right across the healthcare
system.
So
we have the capacity constraints, but we also have the budgetary constraints, and that's why we're in this situation and the decision was made around the recruitment freeze. So what do you do about that? Because the allocation was 21.124 billion in the last budget. So where should it go to?
Well, I suppose I made the point in our alternative budget, we proposed an additional 1.1 billion of spend in healthcare on new measures. And a portion of that would have been to recruit the same number of staff that we have been recruiting over the last number of years. So on average, we've recruited a net increase of about 6,000 staff into the health service. These are not just nurses and doctors, they're radiographers, they're people who work in community services, in chronic disease intervention teams, teams that care for older people in the community, mental health, all of those areas where we have real capacity deficits. So not to recruit staff into those areas means all of those very all of those services that are very challenged. And I spoke to chief officers in community services again across the state, and they're very concerned about some of these services. These problems will get worse. So for me, the first thing that should happen is the recruitment embargo is lifted, that there is sufficient funding made available to ensure that we can recruit at least the same number of staff as we have done over the last number of years, and that the Minister gets the capital funding to start building those 1,500 rapid build beds. And we know from the HSE what they've been saying in the last number of weeks and months, that the plans are there, sites have been identified, these can be delivered very, very quickly and rapidly, but they don't have the funding.
I know when I asked you about Tony O'Brien's assertion that the number of people waiting on trolleys, that that has reduced and the length of time that they're waiting has reduced. You explained that by saying, well, you're cancelling non-urgent elective procedures on the other side, so you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. But we see the INMO again calling for all non-urgent elective procedures to be cancelled to deal with the current overcrowding crisis. Do you agree with that strategy in the short term?
Well, that's because there is no other option for hospital managers, and that's the point I'm making. If we had the elective-only hospitals that were committed to a number of years ago, and remember, that was one of the big reforms that's needed in the healthcare system to separate scheduled from unscheduled care. If those hospitals were in place, then we wouldn't have to cancel elective procedures in hospitals and have all of those people who are waiting for very basic treatments to have their procedures cancelled. We know that sites haven't even been identified in Dublin yet for the elective-only hospital there. We're not even at the starting gate in Cork or Galway. So what we're saying here to hospital managers is cancel all elective procedures, shift the problem from one part of the health service to the other. And in fairness to those hospital managers, they don't have any other option because they're dealing with a very, very difficult, challenging situation in emergency departments. So I don't blame hospital managers or indeed the INMO for making that call. That's just the reality of where we are.
Okay.
The problem that we have in terms of capacity and the fact that we have to make those decisions is down to a government that has not properly funded the health service.
So I want to ask you about another issue, which is in the news today. The Irish Daily Mail is reporting that Sinn Féin is shifting its position on housing refugees from Ukraine. So Craig Hughes is reporting that Mary Lou MacDonald has expressed a different position from your two frontbench colleagues, Matt Carthy and Eoin O'Brien. We know that Mary Lou last month said people in critical jobs should be allowed to remain here. So Is that the position? Because Matt Carthy said they should be able to stay till the end of the war. Eoin O'Brien has said Sinn Féin's final position will be decided once the government declares its position. So which is it?
Well, I think there's lots of selective quoting in relation to what any of the spokespersons have said. So just let me be very clear. The first thing to say is that the Temporary Protection Directive will remain in place until March of next year. And it's very clear that our view, and I would hope the view of the government, is that all of the protections that those Ukrainians who are here have will remain in place, obviously, until that directive ends in March next year. What we then need to do and what the government needs to do is plan for what happens then. And we've been calling on the government to present their plan because there is a number of options, which is what Marilyn MacDonald was talking about and indeed Eoin O'Brien. One is that people who have critical skills can obviously access that element of the immigration system to see if they can remain here and work here under that system. But then for the remaining Ukrainians who may not have those skills or may not be able to avail of that service, then it seems logical that they would move into the same immigration system and seek asylum or international protection the same as anybody else. And the point we're making there clear is that we have to plan for that. We have to resource this because we're potentially talking about tens of thousands of additional people who will go into the international protection system and to be seeking protection, but also seeking asylum status. Okay. And that's going to require a lot of resources.
And what do you say to Leo Varadkar, who told the Mail that Sinn Féin is adding to the trauma of these people who are fleeing war and causing unnecessary anxiety?
Well, listen, whatever problems the government have and Fine Gael have, it's always the modus operandi of Leo Varadkar to place the responsibility or the blame back on Sinn Féin's door. We're not in government. We're not the ones that have a responsibility to plan for this. What we've been saying to government is that you need to set out what the options are, what the plan is, and we have been consistent in what we've been saying. So I think this is an attempt by Leo Varadkar to shift the blame for his government's lack of failure to plan onto other opposition parties. We have been very clear to government that for those who are here and who enjoy the protections under the Temporary Protection Directive should retain those protections, of course, until such time as that ends. When it does end, we have to look at all of the options. And the options are critical skills, applications for those who have those skills. That's one option. And then for the remainder of those people who are here, they will obviously have to move, I would imagine, into the same immigration system as anyone else. And then that creates capacity problems. Okay. That's what we're saying to government.
All right.
Spell out what's going to happen.
David Cullinan, Sinn Féin TD, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Claire.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.